Welcome to UEG Podcast, where we talk about scientific discoveries, educational insights, and professional development within the world of digestive health. Whether you're a clinician, researcher, or just passionate about GI content, this is the podcast for you.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to part two of this episode, Complications and Endoscopy Discussion with Dr. Shreesha Hebbar. In part one, we discussed about the complications, what immediate actions one should take. We discussed about consent process. We discussed about how to react during a delayed complication. So Shreesha is joining us again today. I've introduced him in the first episode. He's a consultant gastroenterologist and director of endoscopy at Royal Stoke University Hospitals and recently organized the first UK Complications in Endoscopy Symposium. Welcome back, Shreesha.
Thanks, Pradeep. Thanks for being again here.
Thank you. So, Shreesha, I would want to take you back to the symposium. You, rightly so, you invited some patients and relatives who had experienced complications to talk about their experience. And for our listeners, can you explain what would be patients' perspective with regards to sort of the consent process and what would they like to know? I think you briefly explained that towards the end of the first episode. Maybe you can elaborate on that.
Yeah, I think from the patient's point of view, I think it's important for them to know why we are doing this. I think, as I said, the indication is the most important. And I think as long as they know that this is the best option, I think because we need to elaborate to them what are the options. And if they're aware that this is the right indication, this is the best option, and irrespective of how complicated the procedure is, most of the time the patients will accept that. And it's also important for us to elaborate our experience as well. Sometimes now I do quote to my patients, especially with ERCP, my complication rate. I think maintaining your own personal data, your own unit data, your organization data in detail, and quoting them to the patients really helps them to develop that trust between you and the patient. So the fact that I think that is really important for especially like a procedures like ERCP as well. And in fact, over the years, our complication rate has come down significantly compared to what the quoted complications has been in the studies. And then the procedure complications discussion with the patient has to be appropriate for the circumstances as well. You know, again, as we discussed in the last episode, the patient had other plans in their life, and whether doing this procedure now is appropriate, or when you're quoting such high complications, whether doing these procedures after their important life event is important, you know, we have to have that discussion as well. For example, in the previous episode, we discussed about where the patient wanted to go on a cruise, and then I said, yes, you can, but then the patient developed complication. But in hindsight, I should have said, you can go to the cruise and then come back and when we'll do this procedure, because if you have a potential complications, then definitely you can't go on the cruise, which you have been planning for last two decades. I think it has to be tailored to the circumstance of the patient as well.
Yeah. And I want to stress that what's best option, what you think for the patient may not be the same from the patient's perspective. For them, the best option or maybe a completely different thing, you know, leaving the polyp all alone and live with the polyp rather than, I guess, or live with a stone, for example. I'm happy to take that risk rather than going through this. So I think it should be very individual in that aspect. Shreesha, early recognition of sort of any delayed complication is important to improve the outcomes. We talked about this earlier, and our patients often present very late. And you mentioned something about you put certain measures in place. You briefly mentioned some leaflets and things. So what's your practice? What measures do you take or have in place to recognize these delayed complications, the support the patients would get in case if that happens? So can you just elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, I think to prevent the, what you say is a delayed complication, as I mentioned, that majority of the times, these delayed complications are unrecognized complications at the time of the procedure or at the time of the recovery. So again, my practice has changed because of the experiences I've had over the years. One of the things which I have learned is that if you think something has gone wrong at the time, as we discussed last time, to doing something endoscopically, even if you overdo it, is the right way than not doing anything. For example, you've done a polyp resection. You think, has it gone a little bit deeper? Clipping at the time itself will avoid sleepless nights and also a potential delayed complication for the patient rather than just not doing anything at all. For similarly, in an ERCP setting, a post-sphincterotomy perforation is very difficult to diagnose at the time as in a colonic perforation. And if we think we've just gone a little bit more deeper, putting a fully covered metal stent in is what we think is the right thing to do, even if it's a bit more expensive. So sometimes we think that overdoing at the time of the procedure is much more better than not doing anything. Similarly, doing recovery, if the patient is still complaining of discomfort, just dismissing it, saying that I think it should be fine when you go home in a day or two, it will settle down, is not a good option. Sometimes if you're worried about it, keeping the patient in the hospital, getting a CT scan before they go in might be a better option. I think by doing these kind of measures, and if you're really sure that the patient is completely fine, and then giving the right information to the patient about what are the potential complications which they can develop and when they should contact the hospital or when they should go to the A&E immediately, not delayed. I think those kind of discussions are very, very important.
Yeah, so a detailed post-procedure information is very important. And not all of us do that, Tricia. I think, you know, within the UK, I think, you know, we are guilty that some of us don't give full information to our patients where and how to seek help. You know, I've had patients go to their GP with melena post polypectomy, which despite giving them information, for example, sometimes. So these things can happen. So I think educating them properly is important. Tricia, have you come across a patient dying after an endoscopic procedure, whether that is your procedure or your colleagues? Tell us what happened. How was the situation managed after that? And what are the things that go through? That's probably the extreme end of what one can go through in this field.
Yeah, I think, Pradeep, especially for someone like me who has been, majority of my work is therapeutic procedures, unfortunately, I have come across death, not once, but in few occasions as well, when I take my complications, which happened with my trainee as well. So it's important here to say that when it happens with a trainee, I am there. So it's my complication still. So I would say that it's been a few occasions when I've had that. But I think, as we discussed earlier, I think in all the situations, when the indication has not been right is when you really struggle to deal with things like this. So I think if you're prepared well, when you know that you did this for the right purpose, then you have crossed one battle. And the next aspect is that having that communication with your patient and the family right from the beginning, explaining them, being transparent what has happened, and then, as we discussed again, apologizing for what has happened is all very crucial steps in your healing process as well. Again, we're all different. We all deal with differently. But for me, what's important is that once I've done all of this, I go into deeper aspects of identifying, reflecting on the procedure and where I could have done things better. And then I always seek for one or two learning points from every complications. And if I've reflected on it and I know that I'm going to apply it on it, then for me, that guilt and shame and all those emotions disappears. I know when things like death happens, it will not haunt you, but it will always be in the back of the mind where similar situations arises. But I don't dwell on it more longer, because if I keep on dwelling on it, then that will affect my further procedures. You can become risk aversion and I might not do the right decisions. So for me, the learning ends once I've got the reflective points and then I move on.
Yeah. So do you have a process where serious complications such as that is reviewed by, let's say, your colleague, and kind of not as a pointing blame or whatever, but as a learning process, if there was anything that could have been done? And I'm sure mostly we would have done everything according to with the best interest in mind, but there may be an occasional learning point that we could have missed or we could have overlooked. So do you always have asked one of your colleagues to go through this and go through the case notes, for example, and see if there's any points to improve in such a serious complication?
Yes, I think this is a detailed process. I was talking earlier on my personal journey on it, but obviously I get those learning points after a detailed discussion with my colleagues and the team as well. And as you know, as part of the clinical governance, we have to do that to make sure that we have a detailed discussion with the team. We used to have an yearly meeting or once in 6 months meeting where we'd go through these complications in detail. But now I think that's too late. You know, we should disseminate that information, get those learning points quite early on. What in, especially in ERCP, among our colleagues, what we are doing now is that as soon as there is a complication, we get the team very quickly along and then go through the complication in detail, put out our learning points, what I think I should have done better, but then also ask them, is there anything which I have missed? Is there anything from your point we should have done differently? And then make this as a team learning effort. And it's also important that you disseminate this information wide as well. I think once we get one or two learning points, there's no point just keeping it in. So there are several instances where in our courses, we have said, we have had this complication. And then there's so many of them said, yes, I have seen this, I have seen this. But if we don't disseminate this information, unfortunately, this will happen somewhere else as well.
Okay, and we'll come to that a bit later. I want to talk about it in towards the end of this discussion, Tricia. Let's move on to the endoscopists. And you alluded to that we all deal with things very differently, depends on our personalities. And how does a complication affect endoscopists as a person in terms of their performance, psychologically, for example, and their future performance? And how could you put measures in place if endoscopists go through an extreme complication such as death or even a serious complication?
Yeah, I think, as you said, we're all different. And unfortunately, for some people, this could lead to increased stress, anxiety, the guilt, the shame all comes in as well. And all of this can make them lose their confidence, make them risk aversive. And unfortunately, for some, it can also stop them from doing the procedure as well. So I think the emotions can be varied, but of all of this, the most dangerous people are those who don't have any insight at all. I know there are people sometimes who it is a procedure which was a problem, or it was the instruments which was a problem, or the nurses, or the patient, but never themselves. But most importantly, I think majority of us, thankfully, lie in the other extreme wherein we are actually reflective upon it affects us quite significantly. I think we still have that tendency that, yeah, there is a complication in the list, and then we carry on, we crack on and start doing the next procedure. You know, you take about half an hour or 45 minutes, you deal with it and go move on. But I think we have to change that attitude. People try to understand how much it has affected them. So I think the best thing for the patients as well, if the complication happened, like that somebody else takes over the list on that day, we don't do that. We should start doing that. And also the debriefing as well, even if it is a consultant colleague, having someone as a mentor to who can they can go and speak to them and discuss about the complications is very, very important. So as for the trainees, again, we have to give that debriefing very, very well, where it's a non-judgmental way. And then again, our clinical governance process, thankfully, is changing, especially in UK, where there was a root cause analysis before, wherein some amount of blame was placed on the individual. Now the new clinical governance, the patient safety, what is called as a PSERF in UK now, at least in theory, is about not blame the individual, but look at the system and change the system. So how well it is adopted and how well it will change the system without blame the individual, we have to see. But I think the thought process should be on these lines to support the individual, but also not blame the individual, but look at the system and processes which affects it and change them.
Tricia, you mentioned about the invincible endoscopist whose everything else is at fault except for him or her. Let's talk about the endoscopists in trouble and those who have a pattern of complications, multiple complications. As an organization or as a leader within your organization, I don't want to put a blame on someone. I guess people who do extremely complex procedures by nature will come across more complications. The very nature that I remove failed procedures or complex polyps does mean that I will have my higher burden of complications. So we need to recognize that. But there are outliers within those fields. Either, you know, you're choosing the wrong indication and you're doing wrong procedures, for example. And sometimes it might just a bad luck, you know, series of events, one after the other. How do you recognize those? What processes can be put in place within an organization to deal with such individuals?
Yeah, I think it's important when you look at that cases in detail, have a detailed discussion among the team and identify what were the learning points as we discussed. And also when you're having the discussion with the individuals, even if there's a series of complications, you know whether this was something which was avoidable or was it just the nature of the procedure where they had, unfortunately, a series of complications. But even if it happens, series of complication when it was unavoidable, it affects the individual. I think it's very important to support those individuals in those time, even if it was unintended, even if the indications were appropriate, because it does affect them. And in fact, these individuals have significant insight, and in fact, they want help. You know, any measures you could say that, okay, apart from debriefing, having supportive shoulders, offering them that, why don't we do a few procedures or a few lists together? I'm sure majority of the individuals who have insight will accept that. But you say the outliers are the ones who don't have any insight. And those are the ones who will not accept measures like this, wherein saying that, why don't we do some supportive lists? Why don't we do the list together? Why don't somebody observe you and then offer you support? And in fact, people who are outliers, who don't have insight, don't accept that. And in those situations, I think it's very important that the organizations make every effort to make sure that the patients are protected. So I think gathering all the information from your allied colleagues, the nurses will give you information as to how the individual is, and your other colleagues as well. So I think if required, we have to be, rather than beating the bush, I think it's very important the organization takes decisive actions in those times. We're not stopping the individuals from doing the procedures. We are just saying that at this moment, I think probably you will not be given this accessory for the time being, for example, ESD knife or something else, until you do few procedures with your other colleagues. And then everyone is deemed that you are fit enough to continue doing this. I think you have to put it in a much more diplomatic way. But at the same time, the patient comes first. And in those situations, we have to take those efforts wherein even if you have to stop the procedure from the individual from doing the procedure for that moment, we have to be very, very decisive on that.
Yeah. So it's about putting that supportive infrastructure rather than putting barriers on such individuals.
Exactly. I think we can never judge immediately in those situations. I think we should never be saying that you will never do this again. I think that's not right. I think we have to provide them the supportive environment to do that. But you might be able to convert, even though you call this outliers, with support. Again, majority of the people will turn around. Humans are good in general. You know, that's something which we have to take it on. There are only very few individuals who come into that category, what you call as an outlier, where we have to stop them from doing it completely.
Shisha, trainees and complications. In brief, where does the responsibility rest?
Yeah, Pradeep, I think I've been very vocal on this, and I think the responsibility lies completely on the trainer. I think we have to take complete responsibility on this. There's no second thoughts on this.
Shisha, I just want to briefly talk about the symposium that you organized recently. How did you get the idea? How did you go on choosing the content? And who did you consult? And I found it very amazing. I think there should be a lot of future events like this. And as being part of a national society organization, how would you take things further in terms of educating people, organizing such symposiums, let's say on a national level or an inter-European level? And have you already made some, if you want to reveal your secrets, made some progress in this aspect?
Now, I think this came about, the thought about the complication symposium came about mainly from the discussion I was having from one of our national colleagues while we were having a train journey together after meeting in London. So this is out in the open. So I can say that this individual has had the situation wherein he was a national news and wherein he had 4 complications and all the inquests were held under media scrutiny. And so he asked me, is there an opportunity for me to speak somewhere? And when all the aspects he mentioned about was all about positive things, what support he got after all these events. And then that's when we decided that, why don't we put together a complication symposium, which will be very useful. And within about 6 weeks, we designed the program mainly because of the support we had from many people I spoke to. And thankfully, because of the BSG involvement and so on, we have got so many national friends and then made a few drafts and then showed it to them. And then within 6 weeks, we had the program. And then going forward, I think one thing we have to, which I've been saying, is that we have to normalize discussing complications. I think this should become a focus. We normally focus on things, how to do well, how this procedure is done and how this technique is done very well. But I think there's so much of learning from when things go wrong, and especially with the newer procedures, we have to keep highlighting every procedure which has gone wrong. And that's when we learn more from it. And my own personal journey, I can say that the more I've discussed my complications, my procedures, complications, my personal experience, my complications have gone lesser and lesser. And I think that is what we should be doing, and nationally and internationally as well, where complications should be a focus of every meeting and focus on when things go wrong. We have already recorded from our complications symposium, and we have some ideas how to promote this or to disseminate the information which we had from our symposium elsewhere as well. But early days.
Lovely. I guess the big meetings like UEG Week should have probably half a day dedicated to, or maybe, a separate symposium altogether at a European level would make. And I hope, Shrisha, you will continue to do this yearly or biannual, not once every 2 years or so. Shrisha, thanks for joining us so early today. I know it was 6:30 in the UK and we both have to go to work now. And thanks for your time and effort into the discussions. And I hope our listeners benefited from all the discussions that we've had. Any final words before we wind this?
No, I just want to thank you, Pradeep, and the UEG for making this topic a priority and discussing this in detail. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to UEG Podcast. We hope you found some new ideas, insights, and inspiration to take with you. Don't forget to subscribe, and if you like our content, please leave us a review and share our podcast with your colleagues.